Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Fourth and final hour, Darren Donick and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Chase has the day off. Don't forget our college football game of the week, presented by Gary Force Acura this week. The SEC tilt will be the Iron Bowl, Auburn and Alabama, facing off for the 85th time. Kickoff will be at 2:30 and heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Some things to pass along. Ravens right now are planning on traveling to Pittsburgh tomorrow for their Thanksgiving tilt against the Steelers, although, albeit, five players have tested positive, four staffers have tested positive, and the Ravens are trying to work through a lot of positive COVID-19 tests among players and staffers, as you just heard. But as of right now, they are still planning on playing that game. But some more positive tests, Willie, could change all that. And what is interesting through all of this, as we've talked about, the Ravens and the Titans just coming off their game, there really hasn't been any, you know, right now there's been no data to show that there's been, I guess, the transferring of this in the course of a game, isn't it? Which is interesting, right? Because there's been a lot of dots that you could connect that you would think, uh-oh, rut-row, this just happened to this team just played this team, and oh, by the way, that team just played that team, and there would be this trickle-down effect of, oh my goodness, how is that going to affect all these upcoming games? And there really hasn't been any of that to this point, which is interesting.
We're thinking
a 60-minute game, right?
We've been touching on this a lot. No, in our talks, like, for example, with Tim Hasselbeck, he has made that point a bunch of times, and fortunately that's the case, and tying it in with another piece of news, let's just hope that that's the case in basketball too, even though the games are going to be played indoors. We'll see what that does with air circulation and a lot of the things that people are fearing for the winter months, the challenges of hockey and basketball played indoors in particular. Tennessee has had to reschedule. They're not going to play their first couple of games. I'm trying to remember the name of the tournament, the Vol Invitational. Is that what it's called? They put that out there. The Jimmy V Classic.
Jimmy V Classic.
They were scheduled to play Gonzaga in that, and because of the positive tests, including to their coach, they will not be able to play in that. So it's tough. I mean, college basketball really having trouble just getting off the ground here. I'm curious how many more cancellations there might be this week. Vanderbilt is scheduled to play Valparaiso on Friday. Let's hope that one stays on. I know Belmont is getting ready to leave for their first game. So, and you know, there's way more teams right in Division I, so there's way more games. But so, you know, there are going to be more games canceled because there's more games, right? They play two games or three games a week as opposed to one for football. So it's going to seem like there's a ton of games, but there's going to be challenges for college basketball that are even greater, I think, than there are for football.
Well, there was, and college basketball has done a really good job of this over the years of trying to get the early interest, some good matchups. There's so much, there's going to be so much hype around this Tennessee basketball team, and them against Gonzaga would have, you know, created quite a buzz, right? That would have been a must-watch game. And then they were scheduled to take on Notre Dame after that. So those games are off the table now. Those are no longer going to happen, and Tennessee's next game is supposed to be now December 12th, at least on the schedule, against Cincinnati. So everything before that has been canceled. It is not going to happen. Just like the game here on West End, Tennessee was supposed to come in and take on Vanderbilt. Now Vanderbilt's football coach Derek Mason is on the line, and he learned yesterday that his next opponent will not be the Vols. Instead, rather than a home game against Tennessee, now a road game against Missouri. Welcome to 2020, right? It's also known as just a Monday in 2020. As Derek Mason is on the line with us. Coach, how you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing well. Getting ready for practice. Excited about the day. New opponent in the last 24 hours, but locked and loaded. So here we go.
I said this earlier, Derek. And Willie and I have been doing this 20-plus years, and we have never talked about in a football game where you prepare all week, right? Football's different than the other sports where they play multiple games throughout the course of a week. You spend your whole week preparing for one opponent. We have never, in the 20-plus years we've been on the air, talked about a potential football matchup that weekend, and then in the next day's show talking about a completely different game involving the same team, right? I mean, we just never thought in our lifetime you would see a football game change, your opponent change in the course of a week. Well, like I said, in 2020, nothing should surprise us anymore.
And it doesn't, truly. When you look at, you know, where we are, the landscape of where we are, you know, I mean, every day is an adventure. And that's sort of what we talk to our guys about. Hey, just attack the days, and really you don't know what the day holds, but just make sure, man, you keep your eyes, you know, forward facing, man, so you can take care of what needs to be taken care of.
So with that being said, this is your new challenge. You've had a lot of challenges throughout the course of the season, whether it's COVID related and now a different opponent. What challenge does that present for your kids and more importantly for you and your staff to get ready for a new opponent?
You know what? The challenge is one that sort of shows up every week. It's just we've got a little less time to do it, and that's okay because both teams, it's not like Missouri knew any earlier than we did. But, you know, when you talk about game plans, obviously we were scheduled to play Missouri, earlier.
Yep.
In September, and, you know, like what we found was that I think early October, and what we found was that for our team, we had to pause, we had to, you know, shut it down, and we knew that we were going to get back to them at some point in time. We just didn't think it'd be, Monday at 5:30, in the midst of getting ready for Tennessee. But as that sort of shifted a little bit, you know, we dusted off some of the preliminary game plan stuff that we had, just had to fact check it versus the film. And then, you know, proceeded to look at, you know, base downs, because that's generally what a Tuesday is. We had to move practice back a little bit. And when you look at, you know, where we are, because we're a morning practice team, but because our students, you know, aren't in school right now, we were able to move the schedule back, give our coaches a little more, game planning opportunity. And so we'll get on the field today at 2. So this afternoon, tomorrow afternoon, we'll practice, and then we'll get back to Thursday morning to get us on schedule, travel on Friday, and get ready to play Saturday morning at 11.
As you mentioned, you were scheduled earlier to play Missouri. That game was postponed, so you had that week off, and then you came back from that break, and you played an Ole Miss team, and things obviously did not go your way that game, and it got away from you. But since then, guys just look like a different team the last 3 weeks, and albeit it hasn't turned into any victories, which is ultimately what you're looking for. Your game against Mississippi State, your game against Kentucky, and even this Florida team, which has been basically rolling through everybody. You guys hung in there. What has changed, Coach, the last 3 weeks with your football team?
Well, this football team is growing up and growing together. Obviously, man, we've got some veteran leadership, you know, with Dial and Andre Mintz, and you look at Cam Johnson, you look at, Grant Miller, and really what those guys are doing. But I think, our young guys, you got a young quarterback in Ken Seals, man. You got a veteran, in Chris Pierce, in that receiving core that's stepped up. Our offensive line has had to be somewhat patchwork, but every week, those guys show up. Young running backs, secondary, is young. We got young backers playing. I think, what's really happened with this team is that this team has had to grow together. It hasn't been, as connected a football as we'd like, but, it's gotten better. These players have never been, shy away from a challenge or opportunity. They've stuck together. It's been hard. I'm not saying that this is all easy, because these guys want to win, okay? And they practice to win. I think Dial, mentioned that earlier. But I think what they're they've learned to do is play hard for each other. They've learned how to trust one another. As guys are getting better, guys see themselves getting a little closer to the end goal. And we look forward to the opportunity this week versus Missouri because they're a good football team. We got to go to their place. And sometimes, you know, again, I've said it earlier, man, if you want to, you know, get to it, you got to go through it. And we've had to go through our fair share, but we're getting closer. And hopefully, like, this is the week. But you got to prepare the right way, take the challenge, be ready, you know, when your name is called, and let's play.
You brought up Chris Pierce, and you know I've brought him up several times to you throughout the course of these interviews every Tuesday. And he really has jumped out at me and just – what he brings, but he's not a new guy to your football team. It's not like he's a freshman. He's a guy who's been around the program, but for whatever reason, the light bulb, and he's this big, massive target, and he's got that dog in him where he will go up and get the ball. What's changed? I mean, he's already got more catches than he's ever had in any year in your program. What's changed for Chris?
Well, Chris has always been consistent, but, you know, playing in the, you know, the shadows a little bit of a Pinckney, and, you know, Kalijah, you know, he wasn't as pronounced, you know, earlier on. He was the third option, okay? And now, you know, like he finds himself having worked hard the whole time, having grown with a quarterback who likes to find him. I mean, the quarterback likes who Chris is because he knows that guy's going to make plays for him. But he feels that way about Amir. He feels that way about, you know, Cam Johnson. He feels that way about Brent Bresnahan. Now, here's what I think, you know, with Coach Fitch being able to, you know, open this thing up a little bit and telling, you know, guys like Chris, hey, look, this offense is built for you. Okay, quarterback's going to find you. You got to go make plays. And the guy that makes the most plays is probably going to be the guy getting the football. I mean, that's happened. That's basically what's happened. He's always been there. He had big plays in the past, man. They just haven't been as consistent. You know, I can remember going back to Purdue. I mean, he had a heck of a ball game when we played Purdue. But then, you know, he sort of, like, went away because he wasn't targeted. And now what you see is through the offense, we can actually get players the football in one-on-one matchups. And it's about players. So building it out the right way is important. Our quarterback being confident in what he can do is important. But Chris showing up and being there every day, it's probably been the biggest answer to that question.
He was strong the other day, no question. We're talking to Derek Mason. And, Coach, as you mentioned, you're starting to really get some good role definition on your offense, and you can see it seems to grow every week. And you did this in spite of not having maybe your most versatile offensive weapon, a key on Henry Brooks. It sounds like you're optimistic that he could return this week, which would certainly be nice to have him in there.
Oh, absolutely! I'm excited. I saw him downstairs. I mean, he'll be in a different color jersey today, but he's on the grass. He'll be uniformed today, and it'll be good to see him out there. I mean, we understand what he means, you know, to the offense. I mean, he's another weapon who is nuanced at being able to run the football. He can block and pass pro. You know, he's a high priority target out of the backfield, and so it just makes, you know, like a defense not be able to hone in on one particular player. So when you got, you know, five skilled players on the field who can get the football, you can't guard everybody. So with that being said, our offensive line has done a great job, you know, in protecting as well as run blocking. And you know, like Keon's, you know, man, been a workhorse for us, and we're glad to, you know, see him back in uniform. Here we go.
And as you say this, I think back, you know, week to week, I believe this is right. You haven't had all these guys we're talking about. You haven't had all of them on the field for a single game. Knock on wood, this could happen this week for you.
Yeah, we have. You know, again, that's the year of COVID. I mean, it's been, you know, like that way for us, from our offensive line to you know, my defense to where we sit in offensive skill positions. We haven't had the same group, you know, every week. So the thing that you're looking, you like to do is make sure, man, that it is a next man up mentality. But when you got everybody, you know, back together, sort of like getting the band back together. When you get the band back together, the music can be pretty good. So we hope to just continue on the trend. We need to continue to trend in the right direction, and doing it on the road, you know, like, has been something that, you know, like, these guys have been challenged with this week. So here we go.
Coach, it was reported on 24/7 that Demetri Moore, a linebacker of yours, who's a senior, of course, he could be a graduate next year, has entered the transfer portal, but he's still on your roster, still on the depth chart. What can you tell us about his situation?
Yeah, you know, Demetri came in and we had a good conversation, and you know, I mean, there's just a lot going on, you know, in 2020. I mean, as many know, I mean, his grandfather passed away earlier,
right? He had opted out and then came back in. For people that don't remember that,
yeah, and for you know, him, I just think, you know, a lot this season, with everything that's going on, I'm talking about the personal stuff. It's just really worn on Demetri, and so man, I look to, you know, resource every one of my student athletes to the best of my ability and our program's ability. But I mean, I wish Demetri nothing but the best. He knows I love him. And we had a really good conversation, and he was just, you know, tired. I think, like, for him, he doesn't feel like, you know, like he had been able to play, you know, like his best football. I think he totally feels, you know, been somewhat exhausted by everything that's happened around him. And I think, you know, in that, they're 18 to 22-year-old young people, okay, man, but just trying to, you know, man, navigate, you know, like the feelings and issues of the day. And so for me, I don't look at, you know, anything. I don't look at this as being anything out of the ordinary, especially for what I've seen in 2020. And I just want to wish him, you know, man, all the best with, you know, what's next. And that's sort of what we do, man. We just keep it moving and continue to know and understand that we've got players and we got to line up and play football when we line up versus Missouri on Saturday.
So just to clarify, is he finishing the season out with you guys, or is he moving on?
He's moving on. He's stepping away. He's stepping away from football in 2020.
I gotcha.
That's what I'll say. He's stepping away from football in 2020.
So let's also look at it from your defense. As we've been saying throughout the year, you know, defense in college football is a challenging thing. If you look across the country, it is tough to get stops. You played one of the best offenses in the country. I really liked how your defense battled. It seems like they're making strides, even though it's hard to quantify that in this day and age, because if you just get a couple of stops, a couple of turnovers, that's good defense, it seems like. And you guys, I thought when you caused the turnover against Florida, you know, you opened up a window where you're one big play away from being right there against the top five team.
Yeah, you bring up the things about, you know, like where this team sits that really have to happen. You have to be opportunistic, and that we got a turnover late, man, but there was a missed opportunity. You know, when you talk about like that ball game, like in a nutshell, you got to talk about the middle eight, the last 4 minutes of the half and the first 4 minutes of the second half. And, you know, in that middle eight, we didn't do what we needed to do. We missed an opportunity for an interception. Okay. And then you turn around and you look up and they throw a shot, and we got a couple guys there and we just don't make the play. And so, like, with that being said, when you miss those opportunities, you know, it can affect you. We come out, man, we don't get an effective stop, even though we had a couple of third down opportunities to get off the field. And what you find is a game that was, you know, been close and should have been close, you know, like slowly but surely starts to, you know, like move in a different direction. Okay, now they continue to play hard, but, you know, those are the things that a team needing and wanting to get to the other side have to be able to do. And so our guys understand everything about situational football. They understand the middle eight. But it's not good enough to understand it. You got to be able to execute, like, in those areas. Again, you know, players win games. You know, like, coaches put schemes together, but players win games. And I think these guys are getting better, but they know and understand that's why they practice. We have to continue to work on those areas so that we can hone in on either being able to capitalize on turnovers, taking the ball away, or being effective in situational football.
Well, Coach, good luck making another step forward this week and getting over the hump for a victory. Thanks a lot for joining us. As always, good luck against the Tigers.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate you so much. Let's anchor down. But have a happy Thanksgiving.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. Coach Derek Mason, Vanderbilt Commodores, great stuff setting the table for their game against Missouri on Saturday. And, yes, it is Missouri. There's been a little shuffle in the last 24 hours, if you missed it. When we come back, we'll talk to Mitch Light about that. Mitch after Mason from The Athletic. We'll talk about the shakeup in the SEC schedule and also what's going on with Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers and his comments in light of the game against Florida State. Some interesting stuff to break down when we talk college football next here on Darren, Donick, and Chase.
Thank you, Victor. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We go from Mason to Mitch. Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll talk some college football with him. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. Hope you're well.
Yeah, everything is good on this end. And I want to start outside of the SEC for just a moment and just get your thoughts on the back and forth with Dabo Swinney and Mike Norvell. And I just continue to be amazed at Dabo Swinney, some of the comments that he makes. And he's done it pretty consistently, and I think he gets a pass because everybody likes Dabo, and he's had a ton of success, and you know, blah 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 blah. But this latest round,
and
of
he's
his
in a market where he kind of controls the
of
media.
Course.
It's a small
well, he,
town.
He does it kind of. He
yeah,
does
I mean,
control.
You sort of strong arm the messaging there.
Sure, which goes on in a lot of places like Columbus, Ohio, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and Baton Rouge. I mean, it's there's no stranger to college markets. You know, the coach dictating, you know, what gets said and what's written about him. And this is no different. But, man, and Dabo, rightfully so, has been getting pounded for his latest round on Florida State. What did you make of that?
Well, I don't think he is getting a pass. I mean, I think your comment originally was more just in general. He just says things. But I agree with your what you just said. He's getting pounded for it. It's one thing to say something. It's another thing kind of dig in and repeat it the next day. And I've seen some – speaking of controlling the message, I've seen some Clemson media come to his defense. Well, he's just answering the questions from national media. Well, he's had a day or two to think about his answers and say maybe they weren't the most sensitive things to say. And in this time, you should always err on the side of caution. And I think he is as guilty as any coach we've seen in recent times of being tone deaf. These guys they live in their own bubble. Their complexes, the physical complexes, they're in their buildings, they're around their coaches, and they make a ton of money, and they sometimes don't realize how the real world works. And he doesn't care. He's just going to keep – clearly he doesn't care. He's going to keep saying what he wants to say. I would love – and this would be a – you know, I don't know what Mike Norvell's bank account looks like, but Norvell kind of said something about, well, if they need the money, the $300,000, I'll contribute. I would love to see Mike Norvell just write Clemson a $300,000 check. That would be hilarious. Obviously, it's easy for me to say. But I believe Florida State, they didn't want to play for health reasons. They're entitled to that. They've had a lot of issues down there. And for Dabo just to say that they basically wanted to forfeit, that's very irresponsible.
I had an interesting conversation with some folks over the weekend about giving, you know, a team from the outside, the Power Five, an opportunity, especially this year. And I realize it's just good talk, and that's what we do on Sports Talk as well. So I'll just throw it your way. I mean, now that we've all seen BYU for most of the season, albeit against lesser competition, I would say, Cincinnati had a little bit of a close call, finally, for the first time against UCF on Saturday, where they'd come back and win. But nonetheless, they get the W. What do you really think? When you've watched Cincinnati this year, when you've watched BYU, do you think, is there really a case in your mind that one of them should get a shot if they run the table as that fourth team?
Two answers to that. Do I think either one of those teams could, you know, represent themselves well in a college football playoff?
Yep.
Sure. I do. I mean, maybe not in one game if they, you know, I know it doesn't work this way, but if they play in five games, maybe they play well once. I just don't think either of those teams are more deserving or have a better resume than some of the teams at the top. Now, I was playing around earlier, a lot of different scenarios, like if Alabama beats Florida and this happens, if Clemson beats Notre Dame, there's a lot of different scenarios, but I don't see either one of those teams getting close to a good enough look unless some just craziness happens. I think the teams that are ranked at the top and that will be ranked at the top, even a one-loss Texas A&M team, a one-loss Florida team, are more deserving. I don't think having a zero next to your name in the loss column makes you a championship caliber team. And this might not be fair. And I know, as someone who, you know, obviously worked at Athlon Sports for 18 years and did rankings, I always said that we evaluate teams each year based on that team. You don't take history or what happens in the past into account, but Cincinnati had a good team last year. Now, they lost to Memphis twice close, but they had a very good team. They're probably better this year. Cincinnati played Ohio State last year and lost 42-0, got just wiped, run off the field. So, again, just throwing it out there. Not saying it's fair to say that, but they played a playoff-caliber team last year and got destroyed.
What do you think they really are, though? Are they really legit? I mean, let's make this a little bit tougher. Okay, Florida loses to Alabama in a tight, tight game, back and forth affair in the SEC championship game. The Gators are a two-loss team. Would you take Florida or either one of those teams over Florida?
Great question. Historically, I have been, the way I've looked at rankings, I don't think there's a huge difference between 0 and 1. But I think there's a big difference between 1 and 2. So you're kind of, if you lose one game, I get it, whether it's an elite team or you slip up, like Alabama in years past slipped up against Ole Miss, and, you know, those Ole Miss teams were good but not great. I would be very torn. I would think that Florida would be a better team there, but if Cincinnati ran that was undefeated, I would have a tough decision to make. I would usually lean towards the Florida there, a team that's played a more difficult schedule. But that's a very interesting scenario. I think this Cincinnati team is among the better Group of Five teams. You know, UCF, obviously, the team that beat Auburn was maybe the best Group of Five team we've seen in the past, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. This Cincinnati team is really good. I haven't seen them a ton, quite frankly. I saw a decent amount of the UCF game just because of work. I've had to focus on certain games that I sort of have to watch, so it's not like I just watch them just because they're on. But, you know, they're clearly a very good team with good talent and skill position, and, you know, they got a great defensive coordinator in Marcus Freeman, and they deserve to be in the top 10, clearly.
If they were to play each other, who wins, Cincinnati and BYU?
That's a great question. I would probably lean towards Cincinnati, but I don't know. I'd love to see that, and I think I haven't read it yet. It's on my to-do list to read on our website, The Athletic, today. We have a kind of a counterpoint between Stu Mandel and Chris Vanini, two of our writers, about whether or not they should play each other, whether it makes sense for them to play each other. That's a game that I think we'd all love to see.
Well, that's what I said this weekend. We couldn't really, you know, we just kind of batted around all these scenarios. I could have kept going forever on this topic. It's fun to do it, but then in the end I said, look, no matter what happens, if they both get left out, which I suspect we all suspect will happen, and I don't know if it's fair or not fair one way or the other, but I said they should find a way in the bowl game. Yeah, if they can make it happen, just put those two against each other in a bowl. You know, I don't even know if logistically you can make that happen.
It's not going to happen because there's only one spot in the group in the New Year's Six for a Group of Five team. But yeah, I mean, just to kind of put a bow on this, I under all the scenarios, I think we're late enough in the year. I don't think there's going to be enough craziness to legitimately open the door for one of those teams.
Yeah, I don't think so either. With this Tennessee thing, and I'll tell you what, I hate that this game isn't happening, because I really wanted to see Vanderbilt at this stage and Tennessee at this stage against each other on Saturday, because 5 weeks ago, I literally laughed when Vince was on with us, that this Vanderbilt team, what if they beat Tennessee? Because that's how different the programs looked 5 weeks ago, and today no one would be laughing at that matchup on Saturday. I really wanted to see it, but we know that's not going to happen. But when you look at this Tennessee team, especially in the second half, and just the stats keep, the wrong stats keep piling up in Jeremy Pruitt's, you know, on Jeremy Pruitt's resume, which, like I said, they're stats you don't want to be attached to. Why is this happening, and how do you think the rest of the season is going to play out?
Yeah, you look at Tennessee and you watch them, and this is where the frustration comes from the fans, is they have a good team. They have a good roster. They're not ready to compete with Florida and Georgia and Alabama, and probably Texas A&M yet, but you see them and you say that's a good football team. They have a good offensive line. Look, go back to the Missouri game, how they dominated, which turned out to be a decent Missouri team. They just ran them off the field. They out-physicaled them. They did everything they needed to do. You watch them for a half against Georgia. You watch them against Auburn at times, and, you know, Eric Gray's running the ball all over the place. It's not like they don't have the talent. That's the frustrating part. It's the third quarter stats. They don't get more damning than that. And it's not all coaching adjustments. Certain things happen, but a lot of it is. And how this thing ends up, you know, I'm usually overly – I talked to you guys for years. You probably find all the times where I'm too conservative when I talk about coaching tenures. I said, oh, he'll be back. That's kind of my stance now. I think there's just too much money owed to Jeremy Pruitt, and he's still Fulmer's guy, and Fulmer's not getting fired, and Fulmer hired him. And there's signs that this can be a good team. Like, South Carolina fired Will Muschamp because they were clearly moving in the wrong direction. You look at that team, they didn't have a lot of talent. There wasn't much skill there. Their recruiting wasn't good. They're like the 46th ranked class this year after being consistently top 25 classes. Other than you just saying Jeremy Pruitt's not a good coach, you can point to reasons why Tennessee should be much better next year. Now, I know people will say, oh, you say that every year about this team. But as the talent matures, they could be a better team. So I don't. It's not the same situation as South Carolina, I guess is my point.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, talking college football. So, Mitch, we've just talked about the net result of Vanderbilt not playing Tennessee on Thanksgiving weekend. Hopefully they do get to play that game because I think we're all very intrigued for the reasons we just discussed. Is there anything else that jumps out at you in terms of the net result of what this does, the league shaking up the schedule for obvious reasons? They want to get as many games in as they can, but what else did you see when all of this was thrown at us yesterday afternoon?
Well, I mean, I don't think there was any grand conspiracy or anything like that. I just think they're trying to maximize their the games. Like, there's been some talk that Tennessee was, you know, maybe flirting with some low numbers this week. So you have a situation where Arkansas had some issues and maybe Tennessee had some issues. So rather than wait later in the week and find out both those teams can't play and then you're stuck Wednesday or Thursday, and then Vanderbilt and Missouri don't have a game, like, would you want to schedule that game on Thursday this week? Well, no, let's just go ahead and be proactive and schedule it there. So I know they're trying to get Alabama, LSU in, but they're just trying to maximize the schedule, and I think there's a definite plan to try and play Vanderbilt, Tennessee later in the year. So I just think it's something the league kind of needed to do and was proactive about it.
What did you make? I asked you last week about the teams in the Big Ten that could challenge Ohio State, and Ohio State probably thinking, you know, the stronger our league, the better we're going to look. What did you make of Indiana sort of challenging Ohio State? I don't know if – I mean, they were sort of playing catch-up the whole game. I never thought Ohio State was going to lose the game, but Indiana did have the ball at the end with a reasonable chance if they make a great drive, and they did it against Penn State. You know, they could have conceivably tied the game up. Pretty good showing by Indiana. And meanwhile, Northwestern turns Wisconsin over five times. Northwestern intrigues me. They're not overly talented. They don't have that really special player, but they just seem to be rock solid, and they keep winning.
Yeah, first of all, who's that guest you had on last week at 115 who said that Indiana just feasts on turnovers and, you know, there's no way Justin Fields is going to turn the ball over?
And he turned it over, what, three times?
Yeah. Three times. My assessment of that game was sort of like same as yours. I never thought Ohio State was going to lose, but it was much more difficult. Ohio State really showed some issues they have defensively. They don't get after the quarterback. And think of what they've had. They've had a run of both Bosa brothers and Chase Young, three of the, you know, top pass rushers in college football over the past 10 years. They don't have that this year. In their secondary, they're trying to figure out some combinations in their secondary. In a weird way, and Bill Landis, our Ohio State writer, wrote this, in a weird way, that was a good thing. Now, if Ohio State runs the table, they're going to be in the college football playoff. But the fact that Indiana gave them a good game will impress the playoff committee and keep Indiana in the top 10 probably. So that helps their schedule. Playing a close win kind of helps their schedule strength. Again, I don't think they'll need it. And same thing with Northwestern. If Northwestern keeps winning and they're a top 10 college football playoff team and Indiana keeps playing well, Ohio State will have more quality wins. what that will only do is open things up if they lose a game. Now, I don't think they're going to lose a game. If they're 6-0 or how many ever games the Big Ten is going to get in, and they lose to Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game, would they get in? I don't know. That'd be a tricky proposition right there. And you're right, Northwestern, they're very, very good defensively. They're forcing turnovers. They made life difficult for Wisconsin offensively. And they're sort of like a less talented, old-school SEC team that just not great offensively, really good defensively. They get the lead, and they just make life very difficult for you. You never felt Wisconsin was going to be able to string together enough first downs to win that game once Northwestern got up by more than one score.
It really was wild looking at Wisconsin. They look so different than they did against Michigan the week before. Let's circle back to the SEC to end it here, Mitch. One of the more intriguing games was Georgia struggling to beat a very average or a team that in Mississippi State that's looked like a mess at times. And in that, they come out of there with JT Daniels looking like the answer at quarterback. Very, very odd. I would imagine there's a lot of questions being asked in throughout the state of Georgia this week. Like, JT Daniels, boy, he looks so much more talented than what they've been putting out there at QB.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair assessment. They're kind of cryptic about Daniels at first. You know, he wasn't cleared in that Arkansas game yet from the ACL injury, but he was after that. And, you know, it's not, you know, 100% certain why he didn't get a chance earlier. He played well. Now, aside from that, there's some troubling things for Georgia. They did not run the ball very well, and that's alarming because they've been a good running team, and Mississippi State had been horrible on offense. You know, last time out, Mississippi State got doubled up from a yardage standpoint against Vanderbilt, punted seven straight times. So that everything about that game was surprising and weird. And
yes,
Mississippi State goes down there with under the limit, really, that required to play. That thing had blowout written all over, and that just kind of tells you shows us how difficult it is to kind of assess these teams. It's more week to week. But for Georgia, you know, I think you can say they found their quarterback moving forward. JT Daniels is clearly looks like their most talented player on that roster right now, or most talented quarterback on roster, I should say.
No question. And at the same time, I would guess, and this is just how fans roll, but I'm sure there are those asking, what would have happened had they just gone with him from the start, for better or worse, as soon as he was cleared? Just take some growing pains early, but would that have maybe given them a better chance to have a better record at this point? It's easy hindsight.
Yeah, fair question. Looking back, the worst thing that could have happened probably was Stetson Bennett playing well against Auburn. I think
right. That
was a game that was a classic Kirby Smart game. They played great defensively. They ran the ball, and their quarterback made just enough throws to win the game. So that gives the coaching staff, hey, that's our guy. He is good enough to win with. If they win that game close, but they get bad quarterback play, maybe they go to Daniels earlier. Not saying it would have made the difference against Florida. Probably not. But clearly you need to score some points to beat Florida this year, and that offense was not good enough to do so.
Mitch, good stuff as always. Really appreciate it. You and the family have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good. Take care, guys.
That is Mitch Light from The Athletic. That's where you can find his work. Always enjoy our college football discussions with him after Derek Mason every Tuesday on the program. We'll come back and put a bow on this show next. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Our show is brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. You should give it a try. Especially for the holidays. Thanksgiving, Christmas just around the corner. Good gift for a family member or friend who's a bourbon lover. I was reading an interesting article during the break, and I'm sure you haven't seen this because I just saw it for the first time. But it's just, I thought I would pass along because it's kind of comical, and I want to get your take on it. You know Craig Carton, who was on WFAN up in New York, right? Who did the morning show with Boomer Esiason before he got busted and went to prison? You know him. He's back on the airwaves up in New York.
Right. I believe it's HBO. They have been running a documentary that they did on him.
Oh, really?
Yes. There is a documentary and I forget what it's called.
Oh.
But it chronicles this. I think it's about an hour long.
Is this out?
So, oh, yeah, it's out.
Oh,
it's been out for a couple of months now.
Oh, okay.
It's really him telling his own story. It almost looks like him and his attempt to try to return to some kind of normalcy and what has been a really crazy ride that he's been on.
Oh, so it's his perspective?
Yeah, of course. And he is very, upfront about how much he screwed up and everything. But, yeah, okay. It's him telling his own story to a large degree.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
And it has Boomer Esiason involved. It has Chris Christie involved. There's some very interesting characters that weigh in on his roller coaster ride.
Well, I was just reading an article where, he's back on the airwaves. He's not with Boomer Esiason, but he's back on the airwaves on WFAN up in New York. And I guess he just told a story on the air of Jeff Francoeur was texting him during the 2010 postseason game when Jeff Francoeur played for the Rangers and the Rangers were playing the Yankees. And he was talking about how Jeff Francoeur was texting him during the game from the dugout when he was sitting behind home plate. He was very visible. He was very animated during the course of the game. That shouldn't surprise anybody if you've ever listened to his show or
he's a
even watched
jock,
it. Right? He's
like,
a shock jock.
For those that have no idea who this guy is, and you wouldn't unless you followed New York sports radio, although they did start televising their morning show on
CBS Sports.
Yes, which I don't know how many people get up and watch that. It's probably a pretty small national audience, probably not much of an audience at all in Nashville, but... This guy's your basic shock jock, say things for effect, don't worry who you offend, just go crazy. Boomer Esiason, more the straight guy, but adjusted, and they did some big time things in terms of revenue generated on WFNN. But why did he go to jail? Because he had also a secret life as a gambler and got completely addicted and went over the top. Millions and millions of dollars involved, crazy stuff. He was very good at what he did, but he got into a big jam, and there was some wire fraud or something that got him.
Well, it was
very
linked to a charity too, right?
Oh, it's a mess. You got
to
watch.
I thought the thing was linked to a charity.
Well, basically, people were giving him big sums of money to go gamble with for blackjack, and. He was running like five different tables and trying to give people return on investment, and he got to keep part of the money. But he got into a deal. Yes, there was something with I can't remember all the details, but yeah, he got into something illegal about that.
I'm gonna have to go watch this.
Most of what he did was legal, even though we're talking about ridiculous sums of money. I wouldn't recommend doing this, but. It wasn't illegal, but there was something he got into that ended up being illegal about how the money was being gambled and whether I don't know if it was charity or not. That didn't ring a bell, but it was a very public thing where one day he just doesn't show up to the show. Everybody's wondering, is he sick or whatever? And then in the middle of the show, on the morning show, they report, he's in handcuffs, he's being arrested by the feds.
I thought there was something to do. And like I said, I haven't seen this. I'm just trying to go back to memory. I mean, this has been years. And years. I mean, he went to the Big House for years. So, and he just got out. I don't know how long. And so I thought he was maybe funneling it through a charity or something. But I'll have to go watch this to get caught up on it. But anyway, he was very animated behind home plate. He had great seats behind home plate. He made a ton of money. He was on the highest rated show on the number one market in the country. And probably making gobs and gobs of money at WFAN. Of course, that's the big talker up there in New York City. And he tells the story that Jeff Francoeur, who was playing for the Rangers, was texting him during the game. And here's some of the quotes. Francoeur texts me from the dugout saying, "Dude, the whole team is watching you. It's the funniest thing we've ever seen. Keep it up." Now, you could say, okay, what's the big deal? Well, there is kind of a big deal about players texting using their cell phone. During the game, there's been a lot of cheating scandals in baseball, and you know you're not supposed to be using the phone and any communication devices in the dugout. And so that, which now is going to, you know, now that he's done this and this has gotten out there, Jeff Francoeur, who of course works for the Braves now, he's probably going to have to answer these questions of, you know, people are going to be asking him, dude, were you texting during a game as a player from the dugout? You were on your phone? You know, so, because that's a no-no, right? I mean, there's been a lot of sign stealing, there's been a whole big mess with baseball, and I'm not saying that's going on. I'm just saying he's going to get hit from all angles of going, why were you on your, were you guys on your phone in the dugout during the course of the game? And so I'm curious how he's going to handle this moving forward, because it's gotten out there. And like I said, Craig Carton was evidently saying it on the air. So he just unknowingly just probably threw Jeff Francoeur.
Yeah, I'm sure Jeff really appreciates that.
Right, exactly.
Just to specify, he defrauded investors of $4.6 million in a scam with co-defendant Michael Wright by selling large quantities of tickets to high-profile events and using part of the money to pay off gambling debts, which is illegal. That's gotcha. Where they got them.
Okay, good stuff. All right, that will do it for us today. Enjoy the rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us the day before Thanksgiving, tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll talk to you then.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.